There it goes. You're recording right now.
Rav Yaakov Nagin, Nishmat HaMishnah.
Do you have another action on the side? Please. Let me have the sheets up to the new chair.
As a resident of Otniel, I'm grateful for the opportunity to begin by thanking the members of the Rena community for all that's been done for the years for Otniel, our sister community. We know that Haman says about the Jewish people that we are Am Mefuzar Umefurad. I think he got the Mefuzar part straight. It was a long fight getting over here. But the Mefurad, the separate part, I think is belied by the fact that on that holiday that Haman helped create, every family in Otniel, the first and best Shalach Manes that each of us get is, of course, from Rinat. And going back a little bit earlier in time, during Yassen in Shul next to Bennett Deutsch, who I never met before, but I've been in email contact many years ago, when during the really dark period of the Intifada, the community supplied us with a beeper system that now in happier days we use it to keep everybody together. Whenever my daughter makes cookies or wants to have a sale, we alert everybody that this is about important events like this through their being together with the beeper system. But most of all, Teaneck, more than any other community, we've had more students, and I'm happy that we have Phil Stein. I don't know if Shirley's father, and we've had many students through the years from Teaneck join us at the yeshiva. There's a saying that the challenge of life is not to discover new lands, but to see the old ones with new eyes. I chose for today both the work, the Mishnah, and topics, prayer and family. These are both, I hope, old lands for all of you, but today I'd like to try to help you see them with new eyes. I'll preface the approach by making a story I heard once from Rav Amital, that a group of Catholic priests once came to visit in Yeshivat Har Etzion, and they arrived right before Mincha. So Rav Amital quickly thought, what am I going to do with them? So he sent them to the place which is empty throughout the week in a Hesdu Yeshiva, the Ezrat Nashim. And looking from above, the end of Tefillah Mincha and Yeshiva looks very impressive. During Shemona Esrei, nobody's walking around, nobody's chatting. And the priests, at the end of the Tefillah, they want to talk only about one topic of the Rav Amital. How do you, the Jews, have you solved the problem of Machshavot Zarot, probably didn't use that word, Machshavot Zarot during davening? And Rav Amital chose to share with them the bitter truth by telling them a story of the Baal Shem Tov. That once upon a time, the Baal Shem Tov met a group of his students, came and said that in a neighboring town, there's somebody who they say he can do miracles. How can we know that he's for real and not just the bluff? And the Baal Shem Tov told them, if he tells you he has a solution to the problem of Machshavot, Zarot, and Tefillah, he's a bluff. And this story captures what we'll touch on through the study of the Mishnah today, the reality that we know how difficult it is to be Mekaveh b'Tefillah. And a lot of that is because of the fixed nature of Tefillah. The words are fixed, the times we say them are fixed. They're not our words, and we're endlessly repeating them. We'll begin the share by going back to that point in time that a major turning point took place in the history of Tefillah, which changed Tefillah forever by giving Tefillah its fixed nature. And we'll study the structure of the chapter that talks with Tefillah to see the sensitivity Chazal had to this price of the fixed Tefillah, and through the Mishnah itself, how we are called upon to respond to this challenge. So we'll begin this year by reading the beginning of Mishnah Gimel, the statement Rabban Gamliel Omer, "Bitkol Yom Mitpalel Adam Shmoneh Esrei." Every day we must say Shmoneh Esrei. Sometimes learning Mishnah, there's a feeling that there's something which is of a banality, because everybody knows that every day we say Shmoneh Esrei. But that's almost like saying that Shakespeare is filled with cliches. This statement is the source of it all. The late scholar of Piyut and Tefillah, Ezra Fleischer, he sees this statement as capturing a major turning point, that through study of Second Temple sources, we don't find any evidence for a set Tefillah, a Tefillat Keva, historically within Am Yisrael. And therefore, this statement and the Agadata that goes within Masechet Tanit, that talks about the formation of Shmoneh Esrei, is touching on a major turning point. Tefillah, which initially, as we know from the Tefillot of Tanakh, were spontaneous and personal, achieve a fixed status based on this fateful decision of Rabban Gamliel. Now, what do we know about Rabban Gamliel to know why it is Rabban Gamliel who is making this tremendous turning point? Why is it Dafka Rabban Gamliel? What do we know about Rabban Gamliel? Who is Rabban Gamliel?
Which Rabban Gamliel are we talking about?
So, Stam Rabbi Gamliel in the Mishnah is Rabbi Gamliel de Yavna, who is, of course, he is the Nasi, the leader of the Jewish people, in that incredibly troubled time of the Chorban Beit HaMikdash. The famous story of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asks for Beit HaNasi. We're talking about Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel, he's the leader. He knows that the Jewish people are going to be dispersed. And he makes a fateful decision to have something that will keep us together after the original center, the Mikdash, has been destroyed. So we have a common vision. Jews throughout the world are saying Shmoneh Esrei. But, of course, we have the price of the fixed tefillah. So we're not surprised that Rabbi Gamliel's brother-in-law, who comes up and protests. And now we're going to turn to the beginning of Mishnah Dalet. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Hoseh tefillato keva, ein tefillato tachanonim. If you make tefillah keva, you make it formalized, you've lost tachanonim. And the essence of tefillah is tachanunim. Now, I call to look at this Mishnah as Rabbi Eliezer debating Rabbi Gamliel, which is the approach taken by the Talmud HaYushalmi that says that every day Rabbi Eliezer would come up with a tefillah chadasha, a new tefillah. And there's evidence in the Bavli as well that Rabbi Eliezer is in fact debating his brother-in-law. The Gemara tells a story about someone who was mitpalel for very long, and Rabbi Eliezer told the people, got upset. He goes, he's not longer than Moshe, who davened 40 days, and someone else davened very short, and said, he's not shorter than Moshe, who davened for Miriam, Elna Refen Allah. So, another approach Rabbi Eliezer, I'll mention later, another approach raised by the Bavli, but I believe the original intent of Rabbi Eliezer is standing up against this turning point in Tefillah, and seeing that Rabbi Gamliel is trying to save Am Yisrael by having this common tefillah for all of us is in fact undermining the essence of tefillah itself. Hoseh tefillato keva, ein tefillato tachanunim. And in fact, this gets back, the Gemara tells us that there are two origins. Maybe one word about Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol. Why should we not be surprised that Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol that's standing up against this move to formalize tefillah? If we know one fact about Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, we'll know why it's Rabbi Eliezer who's coming out against Rabbi Gamliel.
Didn't like change.
So, maybe we should mention two facts, and you're right about that. We know Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, on one hand, he's very conservative in ways, that he doesn't like Lo Omer Davar Shelo Shema Pi Rabo, but something which in some ways is even contradictory, he's very individualistic. We know that he chose to spend his life in Cherem after the famous story of Tanur ben Achanai and not to accept the majority rule. The rule, we go by the majority, Acher Rabim Latot, it's a way of saying this is how we live together as a society. Maybe you're right, but the majority has decided this way, accept the majority. But he chose to spend till his death to be in Cherem and not accept the majority rule, and chose his truth opposed to different shikulim about how to run the community by having to accept the majority rule. However, the Gemara mentions that there are two sources of tefillah. The two sources are, one is approach is keneged tmidim, and the other approach is avot tiknum. In fact, they see these are two values that are underlying the two approaches, that of Rabban Gamliel and that of Rabbi Eliezer. Obviously, the tefillot of the avot are very personal, they're very spontaneous, and this is reflecting Rabbi Eliezer's vision of what tefillah is about. However, I believe Rabbi Gamliel is not only a bidyeved. He's not only saying the mikdash is destroyed, we have to keep together, but there's a positive value in having a set time and structure to tefillah. The view that tefillot keneged tmidim is telling us that the essence of tmidim is the consistency, the ability to day in, day out, continue the same thing in your avodat Hashem. There's a famous medrash that says, "At the keves echad taseh baboker, at the keves shni taseh ben arba'im, ze klal gadol b'torah." Part of the essential of Judaism is having this commitment of not, of despite everything, keeping to your commitment. Another very brief story: at one of my students who was in Yichidat Egoz, it's a very elite combat unit, and he told me very frustrated. He comes back at night; he's very tired from all the exercises. And he says, "The truth is, I daven ma'ariv, and I'm not mitkaven for a single word." And I try to help him see the positive element that he's so physically, he just wants to get into bed and go to sleep, but nevertheless, his devotion to the tefillah of not giving in, the value to his keeping of et kevas echad taseh b'boker, et kevas sheni taseh ben arba'im, by not giving in and living up to his commitments. So we have actually two values reflected by Rabbi Eliezer Gadol and Rabban Gamliel. But what I think, and here I think things are relatively obvious in terms of the regular Limud Mishnah would take us to see that we have two opinions over here. But I think what maybe beyond the visible eye is to see that the structure of this chapter that we'll be looking at tries to see that the value of both of these approaches. And I think this is something which sometimes we take for granted about the nature of the Mishnah, the Gemara, and other sources of Torah Sheval Peh. That it's been pointed out, you know, that Professor Moshe Halbertal has pointed out that in most of second of writings of that period, especially in Megillat Midbar Yehuda, the Dead Sea Scrolls, and much of Second Temple literature, we don't have the text bringing down different opinions. There's one narrator that brings down the truth as it is. And the beauty of Mishnah and the Torah Sheval Peh is the fact that we have the different opinions approached. We know the idea of Elu v'Elu Devei Elokim Chayim. That part of it means that there are values in what both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Gamliel are saying. And the challenge in life is to find how to incorporate it. In fact, we know the word Emet, the Talmud Yerushalmi points out, in explaining why a Beis Din needs three judges, is the word Emet begins with the letter Aleph, continues with the letter Mem, and ends off the letter Taf. Emet is all-encompassing. Emet is that which includes all. And I told this to my father-in-law, Professor Uriel Simon, and he thought a minute and said, you know what? And the word Sheker is... The famous pastor Sheker doesn't have Reglaim, but he added Sheker are three consecutive letters. If Emet is all-encompassing, Sheker, you have one small group all together, standing next to each other, in opinion, the Shin, the Kuf, and the Resh, that's Sheker. But I think we'll see an expression of Eilu Ve'el Devei Elokim Chayim, and the desire to incorporate, by seeing how in the parak itself, although ultimately Rabbi Gamliel's approach was accepted, Rabbi Eliezer's cry of the need for the spontaneity and the personal aspect of tefillah was heeded, and as we'll see throughout the parak, we'll begin by seeing that between these two giants, Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer, a compromise opinion mentioned in the continuation of Mishnah Gimel. Rabban Gamliel Omer b'kol yom mitpalel dam shmona esrei. Rabbi Yeshua Omer me'ein shmona esrei. Something called Me'ein Shmonesrei. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Im Shigur Tfilato Befiv, Itpalel Shmonesrei. Vim Lav Me'ein Shmonesrei. Rabbi Akiva sees Mein Shmon Esrei as a bidieved. But Rabbi Yeshua says, B'lachatchila, the ideal is Me'ein Shmon Esrei. And one question to you, what is Me'ein Shmon Esrei? What is the ideal of Rabbi Yeshua? There is a debate in the Gemara. One approach is Shmuel, who says it's Havinenu. It's a very short bracha, which takes 2-3 words from each of the 18 brachot. That I can see as appropriate maybe for Rabbi Akiva that sees this as a bidieved. But the ideal of tefillah being Havinenu I find hard to accept. So therefore in Rabbi Yeshua, I would see the ideal as being Rav's approach to what is Me'ein Shmon Esrei. And this truly I see as an ideal form of prayer. Me'ein means me'inyan. It doesn't mean necessarily shorter. And Me'ein Shmon Esrei means that me'inyan Shmon Esrei, that we have a brilliant middle shvil hazahav. Rabbi Gamliel, the difficulty is every word is fixed for us. Rabbi Eliezer, saying a new tefillah every day as the Yerushalmi, it sounds easy, but if you've tried it, it's very challenging. The first time maybe it works well, second time, what I'm going to say today, and the middle road is Rabbi Yeshua. Me'ein Shmon Esrei means that Me'inyan Kol Bracha, we take the topics from Rabbi Gamliel. But what to say about each topic, that we leave the person to choose himself. We know that every good lecture, if he would come with a text, everything written out will sound dry and artificial. If he would come and just start talking, things would be very roundabout. He and the congregation would probably get lost. A good lecturer makes a list of what are the points I want to relate to, and then he leads us to the adrenaline to have things flow. Here, I believe, the 18 topics of Shmon Esrei really include any topic relating to life. Shmon Esrei doesn't talk about Olam Shel Mala. It talks about life, the individual, the community, our hopes for the future, and our needs for the present. Similar to my father once pointed out that, going to the Al Chet one year, he said, you know what, in 2,000 years, we haven't come up with a single new Chet. In the same way, the 18th topic of Shmon Esrei...
We're willing to admit.
The 18 topics of Shmon Esrei really can include everything. But it gives us an agenda. It gives us an order to relate to things. And by giving the topics and saying, okay, say a few words about each of these topics, it gives a direction that even Benonim, like ourselves, could find a way towards Tefillah. So you may say, okay, well, maybe too bad we didn't pass him like Rabbi Yeshua, we passed him like Rabbi Gamliel. But what many people are not aware of, something which is even, said in the Gemara, and it's passing in Shulchan Aruch, that within all the 13 Bekashot, before the Chatima of the Bracha, we are allowed to add our words and say, relating to that topic, what we want relating to that bracha. Sometimes there's sidurim that for a sick person will have another fixed paragraph, but you don't have to use that. Before the Chatima, let me read you the relevant paragraph in Shulchan Aruch. Im rotzelos, this is in Orachayim Kuf Yutet Aleph, Im rotzelos sif bekol bracha hem siyo, me'en bracha mosif. Ketzad, hayalo chole, mevakesh alav rachamim bebrachat rufeinu. Hayatzurich parnasa, mevakesh aleha bebrachot hashanim. So we discovered that in the feeling that we're closed, that we can't use our words, it's not true. Each bracha is so short. It gives us the direction. But before the chatima, but it's only going to add a few moments, each bracha, but adding a few words of your own helps you open up. And sometimes that even the fixed words, when you realize they're giving you direction, you're able to link up to them much easier. So here's one approach mentioned by the Mishnah, Me'ein Shmona Esrei, taking the topics from Rabbi Eliezer, from Rabbi Gamliel, using the spontaneous element, your words, and today this is a possibility by adding a few words of your own before the Chatima. Yes, please.
Did you consider
the background between Rav and Shmuel. Mm-hmm. Why would Shmuel insist on the formulated tefillah and Rav was more spontaneous?
Mm-hmm.
Is it conceivably because Rav comes from the Palestinian tradition,
mm-hmm.
and Shmuel is influenced by the Sasanian and Babylonian, which were more formulaic?
It's a very interesting point. It even gets up into a more maybe spiritual terminology. We know that Rav Kook often argues that differences between the Yerushalmi and the Bavli are the place we take for intuition and spontaneity. Rav Kook talks about Eretz Yisrael as Avira Machkimi, the Eretz Nevuah leaves a greater feeling of flexibility, and whereas in Bavel, the Shachla Vitari is often more formalistic. So, mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Let's go back to Mishnah Aleph and see yet another expression of this tension between the two models of tefillah. Mishnah Aleph begins by setting down the times of the four tefillot. Tefillat HaShachar Chatzot, Rabbi Yeshua Omer Ad Arba Sha'ot. Rabbi Yehuda, Tefillat HaMincha Ad Erev, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ad Chlag HaMincha. Tefillat HaErev Ein LaKeva, V'Shamusafim Kol HaYom. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ad Sheva Sha'ot. We have the times for each of the four tefillot. But one of these four tefillot is related to differently than the other three. And which is the unique, which tefillah is different than the other three? Which of the four? Okay, multiple choice, four possibilities? Tefillat Arvit. In Arvit, there's no debate about Arvit. And in addition, relating to Arvit, it says Tefillat Arvit Ein LaKeva. Now, it's a surprising statement. As the Gemara asks, it could have said Tefillat Arvit Kol HaLaila, because presumably, in the afternoon, you can't say Tefillat Arvit.
No
what?
No carbon.
Okay, perfect. So we'll definitely get to that point. Tefillat Arvit Ein LaKeva, so the Bavli adds on, is the Gruss says that Mshat Ein LaKeva means there inherently is no time. This is the Gruss parish on the Mishnah. And the Bavli adds on something that this reflects also that there, the Shita, that Tefillat Arvit, is Rishut and not Chova. Now the use of the word Keva certainly made things more confusing. It would have been easier to give us the relevant information by telling us Kol HaLaila, because of course during the day we can say Ma'ariv. But the Mishnah chose to use the words Ein LaKeva. There's a phenomena relating to Mishnah of word, we're more familiar with this phenomena in a lot of the research done in Tanakh, and we know that in Mechon Herzog in Gush, a lot of the Rav Yol, Rav Meidan, have popularized it in the broader community, the use of word plays, and seeing that the use of the same word in a different context, in the same text, is often designed to lead for the reader to link up between the two contexts. Now, this is extensively used in Mishnah. One of the fathers of Mishnah, pioneers of Mishnah studies, Rav Dr. Avram Wolfish, who I have the privilege to study by.
He's from
Tina. Okay, and I was just with Bernie. I was at a wedding with him this last week in Eretz Yisrael. And he showed the use of word plays within Mishnah to see how Rebbe uses word plays to send us to different ideas. In the context of this parak, there's clearly a word play that there's one word used twice. The word keva we saw used by Rebbe Eliezer. Tefillat Hoset Tfilato Keva Ein Tfilato Tachanunim. When you get to that and you think back to Mishnah Aleph, we see Mishnah Aleph in a new light. One could read Mishnah Aleph as saying we have the serious, important tefillot, which have set times, and we have a second-rate tefillah, which is Ein LaKeva. It's less important. We might have thought along those lines. But in fact, when we see the word Keva being used twice in the context of the Mishnah, and in the more essential place, Hoset tefillato Keva Ein tefillato Chanunim, we're being given a statement that Keva, there's a price to tefillat Keva, and tefillat Keva is not necessarily the ideal tefillah. In that light, we go back to Mishnah Aleph, and we see the phrase, Tefillat Arvit Ein LaKeva, and we realize Ein LaKeva doesn't mean that it's a less important tefillah, it's a different tefillah reflecting a different value. And as you mentioned earlier, that we see that there are two sources of tefillah. There's tefillah keneged korbanot, and we know that korbanot, essentially we have korban, we have shachris and mincha keneged the tefillot tamid. And we have tefillat musaf keneged tefillat musaf. Arvit, although the Bavli does mention an approach that's keneged the burning of the Avirim Pradim, but I think the more simple approach would be the saying, tefillat arvit is a tefillah ein lakeva, it's not paralleling one of the korbanot, but it's instituted, and it's a tefillah which preserves the more personal, unfixed, if shachrit and ilchad are powers that they are fixed, tefillat arvit's power is that it's not fixed. It doesn't have a set time, you don't have to say it, you choose to say it, and it has the power. And just like we have the power of Gadol HaMetzuva V'Yoseh, we also have the power of, it's sometimes called Gerim, Jews by choice, a tefillah by choice. Here's yet another aspect which the lack of keva is seen as a lechatchila in the world of tefillah. Let me continue by having third, and in this context, the last, second to last, aspect of the meeting and tension between the keva and the not keva by reading Mishnah Bet. And Mishnah Bet, Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana, haya mitpalel b'kinisato lebeit midrash u'biyitziyato tefillah k'tzara. Amru lo, ma makom letefillah zu? Amar lehem, b'kinisati ani mitpalel shelo tera tekala yidi. Now, we're all familiar with the tefillah of Nechunya ben Akana. It's a very nice tefillah that we say entering and leaving the Beit Midrash. But I find to be very surprising if the Chachamim ask, Ma makom tefillah zu? What is the place of this tefillah? I would ask, what is the place of this Mishnah? We have Mishnah Aleph talking about the time of tefillah. We have Mishnah Gimel talking about the text of tefillah. The Mishnah Bet seems to be artificially splitting the time and the text, telling us about an anecdote of one of many nice tefillot, but in a short, concise text of the Mishnah, if at all to mention it, maybe at most as a footnote or something at the end, what is this Mishnah doing here? What is this Mishnah doing here? Splitting the time and text of the tefillah by telling us some nice tefillah that people do don't say. I mean, there's so many details to tefillah. This is what the Mishnah has to tell us about in this one. In there are only two short prakim devoted at all to Mishnah. And of course, in light of things that we mentioned till now, I would see the answer as touching on this issue. It's trying to uplift the place of a personal tefillah. Nechunya ben Akana, the point is not that we should all be saying that tefillah. The point is Nechunya ben Akana, he came up with his own personal tefillah. It's a tefillah which Dr. Yisrael Rosenstein has pointed out reflects Nechunya ben Akana's worldview. We have another mission of Nechunya ben Akana in Pirkei Avot, that he sees that if you accept all Torah, you'll be freed from all of Malchut and Derech Eretz. He sees the study of Torah as the key to everything, and he came up with his own personal tefillah. And by placing the Mishnah Bet, we're telling us that don't think that personal tefillah is dead. There still is a makom, a important makom, for one's personal tefillot. But I would like to categorize what's unique about Nechunya ben Akana's personal tefillah and what makes it different to that tefillah of Rabbi Elazar HaGadol. As I mentioned earlier, every day Rabbi Elazar HaGadol would say a personal tefillah. And that's extraordinarily difficult for regular people to be inspired every day. However, Nechunya ben Akana, the way I understand it, is that he had a personal tefillah in the sense that he composed the tefillah, but he would use that tefillah on a day-to-day basis to guide his life. In fact, we know in Masechet Brachot, Daf Yutet Amud Aleph, the Gemara relates of many Amoraim that said that at the end of Shmoneh Esrei, they would each say their own tefillah. Some of them we say, Elokai Netzor L'Shoni Mera, It's not part of Shimon Esrei. It comes from that story about one of the Amoraim, that this is what he would say at the end of Shimon Esrei. We said last week, not this Shabbos, we said tefillah for a chodesh. And we mentioned the tefillah of Rav, what Rav would say every day at the end of Shimon Esrei. What I learned from these Gemarot is not only that we should be saying what they said, we should realize that, again, Shimon Esrei is a, gives us a, in our, in the running through the day, it gives us a time that we stop. And in that structure, we could add, we have the opportunity to do what they've done, of composing our tefillah, not every day, but at least once in life, to find, can I compose a tefillah that reflects that which is closest to me, that what I want to keep in my constant consciousness? And when studying this with the Talmidim in Otniel, we sat down, we each composed our tefillah. This, I think it was 7 years ago that I came across this, and since then, every day before Yom Shimon Esrei, once a day, I add a tefillah that I've composed for myself, and I find this to be tremendously significant, because not only because it's a place that I feel that things come more alive because it's my tefillah, but also one insight, which again I'll touch on a little bit later, we have so much information, but I think what's missing in life is consciousness. Those things that really are close to us, to be conscious of them, and through that point to live our lives. And in Hebrew, I would say it's meida or muda'ut. And we say tefillah every day. If we're looking for more information, daf yomi is a much better path. But if we're trying to impact on our consciousness and every day be conscious of that which we want to live our lives today, going day every day the same, using the same. The same thing, coming back again, beginning your day with the same points, is a blessing and not only a neto.
How would you distinguish between the tefillot that you're mechadesh within the brachot of Shmona Esrei, mm-hmm. versus the fact the Amoraim chose to add their own, mm-hmm. not within the framework of the Emsaliot, mm-hmm. but rather afterwards, which seems to put them in a somewhat different class?
Mm-hmm. So I would see them as being complementary. I would say that it's really two ways to tackle the spontaneity, the fixed aspect. On one hand, the brachot are fixed. I'm finding something personal in that which is fixed. The brachos are fixed, and I find the personal, unique aspect which changes from day to day. If I'm mitpalel for somebody or something, the unique challenges of each day I find within the fixed structure of Shmon Esrei, that whether it's brachata, refuah, or v'tein bracha, or in Israel a lot, ashiva shoftene krishona, leadership. It's every day is a new challenge of something to pray for. So there are fixed bracha, but I add my personal words. What's complementary is at the end of Shmona Esrei, once a day, I add with Nate Yulor Tzani Refi, I add on a short tefillah, and there it's not, it's something which is very personal, but it's the personal that has become fixed instead of the fixed which has become personal.
It doesn't
personal.
Fit into the categories of any of the middle brachot.
Right, because we know that before Yul Ratzon, we're allowed to add anything we want, even more than Shema Koleno. Yes, please.
One of the ways that I personally have found a way to get from the fixed versus the being Mechadish Koleon Tomin, you know, something new, is by saying the Tilm of the day, mm-hmm. after davening, that tilm is going to change on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you a different perspective. Every single day that you daven, mm-hmm. it puts things in a perspective of the tilm of the tefillah of that day.
And I think that's an important statement. Sometimes in some communities, something's happening, it's always Shir HaMalos, which is a very important tefillah, but somehow something is missed. There's an opportunity of seeing the tefillin, there's so much beauty there, and finding and thinking about what's really uniquely relevant to the challenges of today, and by variegating what you're saying in tefillin does allow that opportunity.
Can I ask you, the Shita Rav Gamliel,
yes.
just to reflect mm-hmm. on that for a moment, would Rav Gamliel argue that, yeah, I'm after, don't accuse me of keva in the way that you're saying, understand, I'm just speculating, would he say, understand that the fixed words are designed to then spark your own emotion, mm-hmm. which will be very personal. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, and that's the fourth and last approach I wanted to share with you today, which for me has been the most significant. It's less textually rooted, so that's why I saved it for last, although it is connected to text, because I mentioned the original intent of Rabbi Eliezer Gadol, I believe, is clearly to disagree with Rabban Gamliel, because based on the historical basis I mentioned earlier, and the things in the Yerushalmi. However, the Bavli interprets Rabbi Eliezer Gadol, and this could have been Rabbi's intent in putting it in the Mishnah, as not coming against Rabbi Gamliel, but calling for a personal element within Tefillah. Meaning, the words of Tefillah are fixed, but what they mean to each of us is very dynamic, and I'd like to share with you, it's actually a sad story, the day that I came to this realization, and then maybe go to something happy on that same note to end this part of the shiur with something more sameach. At the beginning of the Intifada, one of my closest former students was then in his mid-20s, he had recently gotten married. He was called Avi Sabag, and he was killed in a pigua during the early days of the Intifada. And one of the hardest feelings after that is, thoughts was how hard it is to build up someone's life. You think of somebody, how much the parents, the teachers, how much a person himself devotes to building himself up, becoming who he is, and the lack of proportion, so easy to destroy and so hard to build up. But suddenly I had a thought that this isn't the only way to view life. You could see life as, if you look at life as every stage is a preparation for the next stage of life, then you see, well, so much we've devoted and nothing, and you never got where you were supposed to get to. But if you look at life, that every part, every day is an end in itself, a blessing in itself, and you have a different perspective. You could say that of course there's a tragedy here, but because every day that was created, that was lived, it was lived in a significant fashion, this wasn't only a means to an end, this was a value in itself. And see that the blessing in every day, as I was Masbid, this Talmud, I mentioned that he had few years, but many days. And after that, I said, you know what, I felt I really achieved an insight about life, but already I'm thinking that, you know what, another month, another 2 months, this is going to be a thought of the past. And I didn't want that to happen to me. But the next morning I woke up and I said, Moda ani lefenecha melechai v'keyam, shechazarta bi nishmati b'chemla rabba emunatecha. And I thought, that's exactly that thought. At least for me that was that thought, thinking that every day, thanking God for getting back our neshama, it means that we're saying thank you for today. Because tomorrow, again, we're going to say Moda ani. Again, we're going to thank God for receiving our neshama again. And for me, that became a daily way to begin the morning and think about that the essence, what I truly have in this world, is today. And grateful for today, and try to live this day as fully as possible. But after that, I discovered that this way of using tefillah as a way of helping be conscious to that which is truly important, everybody really has their parts of tefillah that has the spark that you mentioned. I told this over to one of my students, and now I'm going from the sad to the happy. He married a girl called Hadar. Hadar in Aramaic means chozer, return. So under his chuppah, he darshaned that now at the wedding, she's returning to you. You're part of your oneness is now coming back. So I told him about my modani, and a few days later he comes back to me and says, you know what? I wake up in the morning and I have my modani. I wake up and I say, wait a second. I'm married! And he looks at his wife, Hadar, and says, Moda ani lefenecha, melech chai v'kiyam, shechazar tebi nishmati, you return to me my nishamala, v'chemla, with love, v'abai menotecha. And maybe one last point on this, and this will be ending the first part of the major part, I don't know, what time is it now?
9:30.
Oh, wonderful, so we have time. So the first half of the shiur, which is... when my daughter Nama was born, that was, with my wife, she's a tomechet leida, so she's very into birth giving, and we're in Shari Tzedek, and the baby's just come out, she's all purple, and then my wife looks to me and says, you know what, I finally understand what is tefillat asher yatzar. I go, what? She goes, asher yatzar adam b'chachma is talking about giving birth. Because, you know, obviously, we even know that a midwife is called a chachama, right? So it's creating man, Adam, with chachama. And the whole tefillah is talking about that they're nikavim and they're chalalim, those sorts of channels and the holes, that everything, what has to be open should be open, what shouldn't be open shouldn't be open. And without that, it's impossible to stand in front of God. It's obviously talking about giving birth. And I've been convinced... I've been convinced, and I'm waiting to give birth so then I can really have a kavanah during Asher Yatzar. Okay, so this part ends the first part of the tefillah, of the shir for today, that in the context of prayer, we dealt with these emerging methodologies of noting structure and wordplay within the Mishnah. I'll just mention one last note, is that the entire chapter is based on alternating between the keva and the ishi. The first Mishnah focuses on keva, the times for the tefillah, although there's an inkling of the personal with the relating to ma'arif. Mishnah bet focuses on the personal side of tefillah. Mishnah gimel returns us to the keva part of tefillah. And ultimately, Mishnah dalet brings us back to tefillat, to the personal tefillah with Rabbi Eliezer and another personal tefillah mentioned in the continuation of the Mishnah.
That means you're assuming that the division into Mishnayot, as we have them, is very, very old.
Okay. So I know this is certainly a point of scholarship contention, or even those who claim that there wasn't a break of the Mishnayot, but I think even if it's not a breakup of the Mishnayot, we still, even if it was all one perek, in terms of discussion, the topic is alternating between these two poles. Okay, we'll turn to the second half of the shir for today, which goes from prayer to family, to another topic relevant to a community. And here again, I'm going to start with a little bit of a sad story, quite a sad story, in fact. There's a medrash that says that every piece of grass has an angel that hits it and says, samach v'gadal. And often we know that sometimes the makot, the blows in life, have been something which had led to growth. And we never, of course, want any of these blows, but I think one of the ways that the Jewish people have survived is that when the challenges, the difficulties, the suffering, we found a way to find something positive come out of it and not let these things push us down. That's why maybe Am Yisrael, we've been around so long, because other nations maybe at times have reached greater heights, maybe in terms of external land and population and the like, but when things start going down, they go all the way down. But Am Yisrael, even when we go down, somehow we try to find the positive, or something to grow even from the suffering. So here again, I'll begin the Mishnah with the story. And in the first soldier in Ofrat Yitzuka that was killed was called Devir Amanuelov. I read about him in the papers. It was a very moving story that he had lost his father a short time before, and he has three sisters, but he's the only boy in the family. But he felt, nevertheless, he wanted to be in Kravi, combat, and he chose to be a commander in Golani. And so I was very moved by his story, and then suddenly one day they tell me that his mother's trying to reach me, and it turned out that after his father passed away, when my book on Mishnah had just come out, and he began a chavrusa every Shabbos with his mother in the book Nishmat Mishnah. And his mother calls me and she just says the words, you know what? The last chapter we studied together, the Shabbos before the war broke out and he was killed. And like in the, there's a song in Israel called Gvarim Bochim Balayla. You know, real men cry at night, not during the day. But in the Zohar, it filled Rashbi crying all the time, so I feel that authentic Jewish gavriut is getting emotional all the time. Anyway, she told me, do you know what chapter we studied right before that? And she didn't, before, without even thinking about it, I didn't, before she spoke and without even making a conscious thinking, right away I knew what the chapter would be. There are 50 chapters in the book, but intuitively, right away I knew the chapter that would be that was obvious that would be the chapter. In fact, it's the chapter that we'll begin studying today for reasons that you'll see as we study it. Okay, so there is a famous Mishnah in Kedushin. We're starting with Mishnah Zayin, Perek Aleph. And the Mishnah reads in our text, Kol mitzvot haben ala av. Anashim chayavim v'nashim turot. That they're the whole mitzvot avla ben echad nashim ech nashim chayvim. There are two categories of mitzvot relating to the family. There are mitzvot, here it's called mitzvot haben ala av and mitzvot haav ala ben. However, in all manuscripts of the Mishnah, as what appears in the Mishnah in the Yerushalmi, okay, so you know it, is the. It's really great to see old teachers and so many people that I've contacted, friends, in this room with me. The order is reversed. It's called mitzvot ha'av ala ben, and then mitzvot ha'av ala ben, mitzvot ha'ben ala av. And when I began teaching this Mishnah, I felt somehow this reminds me of something. Mitzvot ha'av ala ben, mitzvot ha'ben ala av. It rang a bell, this terminology, but it took me a long time till I was able to hit the nail on the head, and till I ultimately realized what pasuk in Tanakh I believe that there is a response to based on this pasuk. And what pasuk are we talking about? Mitzvot ha'av ala ben, mitzvot ha'ben ala av. There's some sort of what pasuk? Okay, there is some common denominator, but I think there's a Mishnah that there's a pasuk which is even more striking the similarities between the Mishnah to the pasuk. The closing pasuk of Nevi'im, Beheshiv Lev Avot Al Banim V'Lev Banim Al Avotam. There it's Avot Ubanim. It's a bilateral relationship, the Av to the Ben and then the Ben to the Av, even using the preposition Al to describe the relationship. And in general, a major thing in Mishnah study, I believe it is intertextual studies between the Mishnah and the Mikra. The frame, the psukim are rarely quoted in the Mishnah, but the frame of reference of images and language and terminology, the book in the background in Mishnah is always the Tanakh. So much more than a deliberate, a explicit pasuk, underground, under the surface, throughout the Mishnah, I see this is a very major methodological tool, is to see the dialogue between the Torah Sheba'al Peh and the Torah Shebichtav, the Mishnah and the Mikra. And here I think this is one example of many in which we have which I think there's a dialogue between that closing statement of Nevi'im, V'heshev levavot al banim v'lev banim al votam, to the Mishnah, mitzvot ha'av ala ben, mitzvot ha'ben ala av. There's obviously a large common denominator, but there's also a difference. What's the major difference between the phraseology of mitzvot ha'av ala ben and heshev lev avot al banim? I mean, there's obviously the singular and plural, but there's something even more striking.
Yeah, this last pasuk of Malachi is connected to the first pasuk of Malachi, which talks about a relationship of ahava. Oto ahavti oto saneti. And this relationship with Avu Ben is inspired by this concept of ahava, relationship of
between God and Jewish people.
Right.
There's even a commentary, Rav Tanchun HaYerushalmi explains the pasuk Veheshiv levavot al banim, v'levanim al vatam, as God and the Jewish people, which would have been nice had it said av. Avot al banim makes it a little bit stretching that the avot are, you know, we've heard of avino v'shemayim, v'nat avotena sh'v'shemayim, but I think it's touching on that point that you mentioned. But the striking difference is that the vision of Eliyahu Navi talks about the heart. The generations are connected through the heart, whereas the Mishnah talks about mitzvot. Now, linking up the heart is much more inspiring than talking about linking up through the mitzvot. However, there's a famous essay by Rav Kook, Chacham Adif Minavi. The Rav Kook talks about the changes between the Bayit Rishon in Tanakh to the Tkufa of the Chacham, beginning during Bayit Sheni, and pointing out that he says Nevi'im are like poets, they're like great visionaries. But we know what really changes people, you really have to get down to the nitty-gritty of life. And sometimes the technocrats are a lot grayer, but without them, the vision does not become actualized. And I know I grew up in Manhattan, and I go to the UN, you see these beautiful, inspiring psukim from Yeshayahu. We know that there's nothing in common between these beautiful visions and what happens inside. And part of it is, vision is important, but it's not enough. We know Einstein, you need 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. Edison, sorry, that's what I meant. Right, you're absolutely right, okay. Edison, okay, thank you. And I think that's the message of the relationship between the Torah Shebechtav, the Torah Shealtah, the world of the Navi, and the world of the Chacham. We're not sacrificing the vision, but we know for this vision to be achieved, for the lev, the heart to be connected, we can't leave it as some lofty statements, but we have to turn this into something more defined. And that's where the mitzvot ha'av al-ben define the relationships between avot al-banim, the parents, what their obligations to the children, the children's obligations to the parents, and through that defined relationship, and from that we get to the between the lines, and we hope to get back to the heart, the vision of Eliyahu HaNavi. Now what's fascinating is that I guess 99.99% of people, if I would ask them, what's pshat in the pasuk Veheshiv lev avot al banim v'lev banim al batam, they'd say, what's the pasuk talking about? It's talking about the relationship between who?
So maybe
I have to do with new statistics. Most people, when I mention the Heshev Lev Avot Al Banim Lev Banav Atam, we're talking about the generations getting together, the fathers and sons, parents and children getting together. But in fact, many commentaries, as you explain it, see it as not talking about the relationships between parents and children, at the heart of the parent, but rather the relationship between Am Yisrael and God. And either because of Rav Tanchuna Yerushalmi, that says that Avot is God, which is problematic, as I mentioned earlier, as God being one. Others talk about Heshev Lev Avot Al Banim, it's Al is Im, the fathers and the sons are Chozer B'Tshuva. Or the fathers, Im Al is Ayadei, the fathers will be Machzor the children B'Tshuva, and the children will be Machzor the fathers in Tshuva. But so maybe I got the statistics wrong, but when I read the Pasuk, I feel a part of the beauty of the Pasuk is talking about that Heshev Lev Avot Al Banim V'Lev Ban Al Vatam, that the generations are become together, the hearts become linked. Now the reason why they don't explain it this way, as the Dat Mikveh points out, is because the question raised at the beginning of the Perek is, Am Yisrael asks Kadosh Baruch Hu, B'ma Nashuv, how are we going to get back to you? So if that's the topic, presumably we're talking about the relationship between Am Yisrael and Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's why they interpret it as being interpersonal relationship, the relationship between Am Yisrael and God, and not the relationship between parents and sons. However, I think, and I can show in a number of places, Chazal understood the Pasuk as talking about relationship between Avot Ubanim. Whether it's in the last Mishnah in Idiot that says Eliyahu Navi is going to bring Shalom Ba'olam and brings the Pasuk Heshev Lev Avot Avinim, which I think there the shalom is between with interpersonal and not between man and God. But I think our Mishnah is giving a new interpretation which allows us to read the Pasuk Kipshuto as talking about family relationships. Because in the question, Pamana Shuv, how are we going to get back to you? The Pasuk said, before Heshev Leif Avod, it says, Zichru Torah Moshavdi, remember the Torah of Moshe. Asher Tziviti B'Chorev. But the question is, how are we going to remember the Torah of Chorev? It happened a very long time ago. The answer to this question is, V'heshev levavot al banim v'lev banim al vatam. By having the link between the generations, fathers and sons, parents and children, this linkage, if we have the right relationships between generations, we will overcome time and get back to Sinai. I remember hearing Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, the Rav Rashi of England, saying once, during the trip I had in England, is that there are two nations in the ancient world that seek immortality. One, the Egyptians, by building magnificent monuments to withstand the winds of time. But the Jewish people achieve immortality. They left Mitzrayim, and the first thing that Moshe spoke about was V'igadat levincha. And Jewish immortality is avot ubanim. It's the right relationship between the generations. And that's why, this is a point I heard from my uncle, Menachem Ganak, who afterwards I'm going to be off to a bris, he has a new grandson. Okay, thank you. Is that Eliyahu HaNavi shows up twice on the Jewish calendar. He shows up at a Brit Milah, and he shows up at Leil HaSeder. Because these are the times of Vigadat Levincha. And we know the mitzvot Ha'av Al HaBen are Brit Milah, and Pidyon HaBen when it's relevant, and teaching Torah, and also a wife in Parnassah, but in the more general religious aspects, the Brit Milah and the Torah. And so this is what, so the answer, if we're looking for God, the way to get back to God is first start with the family. And the family has the right relationship, that's how we're going to get back to Sinai, and that's how we're going to get back to God.
Question.
Please.
The word lev, in the context that Chazal used it, what was the lev, the seat of? It's not necessarily a Renaissance lev, right? What did Chazal mean when they used the term lev?
Okay, is lev using the emotional, or is lev something lev less skill? Sometimes lev is considered to be something connected.
Lev a lev, right? It's a different meaning than we would typically think about in the romantic literature sense.
Right. So it might be less emotional and more intellectual connection between the generations. Interesting, I'll mention that in the Kabbalistic work Sefer Yetzirah, the essence of man is focused on the lev, wherein later in the Zohar, the moach is considered to be the seat of the intellect. So that might be also reflecting this change. Okay, but let me get back to the Mishnah. Here we've seen one point of contact between the Mishnah and the Mikra. Although I believe to a significant finding, I think you need a few points in a row to see that this isn't some imaginative association, but something which is really rooted in the text. And that's what I'll try to demonstrate now. And
you have some time.
Okay, how much, please, to find
about 15, 20 minutes.
Okay.
20 minutes.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, thank you. Look, the second half of the pasuk will be a bit shorter than that. Okay. Okay, I do want to catch a little of the verse. The second half of the pasuk, Ve'heshev levavot al banim v'lev banav avotam, the second half is actually very threatening. If this doesn't happen, pen avo vake et aretz cheirim. If this doesn't happen, I'm going to come and the earth will be struck cheirim. Now that threatening note of what's going to happen to the eretz, and what this is linked to in terms of the context in Malachi, that in essence the Brit of Sinai is a Brit relating to the eretz, to the land, a major theme throughout Sefer Dvarim. So if we're not going to keep the Brit of Sinai, of Chorev, ultimately the land will be struck cherem. Now, if you go back to the Mishnah Kedushin, after the topic of family relationships, the next topic in the Mishnah talks about the connection between mitzvot and Eretz Yisrael. And we'll now read the last Mishnah of the Perek. Kol oseh mitzvah achat, mativim lo umarechim lo yamav v'nochel lataretz. V'chol she'eino oseh mitzvah achat, ein mativim lo ve'ein marechim lo yamav ve'eino nochel lataretz. And kol she'eshno b'mikra b'mishnah u'v'derech eretz, lo b'mehira hu choteh, she'nemar v'chot ha'mashulash, לא במהרה ינתק. וכל שאינו, לא במקרא, ולא במשנה, ולא בדרך אחרת, אינו מן היישוב. In manuscripts of the Mishnah, we only have the negative side over here. If you're not in Mikra Mishnah Derech Eretz, then you're going to be אינו מן היישוב. You're going to be cut off from the יישוב. Avi Wolfis has pointed out that that there's a connection here between the Mishnah we mentioned earlier. Of the mitzvot ha'av al ha'ben, at least the religious ones, are the constant ones. Brit Milah is easy. The constant developing of your children, you have the Torah, Mikra Mishnah, and we have the Derech Eretz, giving him a trade. And here the statement is saying, so he pointed out that what's said here is, if you're not the Mikra Mishnah Derech Eretz, means basically, if you fail to succeed the mitzvot that the parents have for the children, you're eino min ha'yishuv. But that point, I would like to relate to the argument made earlier that we're responding to Sefer Malachi. What does Sefer Malachi tell us? Beheshev leiv avot al banim v'leiv banim al avotam. If you don't do that, hika et eretz cherem. So in Mishnah terms, the Heshev Lev Avot Al Banim is talking about the mitzvot ha'av al ben, the mitzvot ha'ben al av. And the non-fulfillment of that, meaning not Mikra Mishnah and not Derech Eretz, leads Eino in Yishuv, Eino Nochel at Haaretz, which is exactly the second half of the Pasuk, Pen Avo Veke et Haaretz Cherem. In other words, so here we have, I think this helps having these findings textually being significant, that we don't have one point of contact to the chapter in Malachi, but actually the two halves of the Pasuk are consecutively these two topics within the Mishnah. We don't have time to go through the entire reading of the first chapter of Kedushin. I think we'll try to round things up now, but I will mention that just in a short note, the structure of the first chapter of Kedushin, the first half deals with Kinyanim. The second half deals with Mitzvot. And in fact, the fact that they're together, again, there's a beautiful literary structure, that there are 10 Kinyanim mentioned in the first half of the chapter. And there are 10 categories relating to Mitzvot relating to the second half of the chapter. And the turning point between these two Mishnayot shows up in Mishnah Vav, talks about something which is in between the world of mitzvah, which is called chiyuv, and the world of kinyanim, which used the word kinyan, which is what's called chalipin. Kol Mishnah Vav, kol nase damim b'acher, kevin shezach hazeh nitchayev, manuscripts without the next word, nitchayev b'chalifav. If you want to make a change. If I am zochen something, I have a cow and you have a horse, I take your horse, and by being zochen, in one side, I am mitchayev, I am obligated to my part of the bargain. Here the word used is not kinyan, but mitchayev. The word kinyan means something very concrete. I physically have taken the thing to me. By chalipin, I take by exchange. When I take something, I am mitchayev. I am obligated to give you what I promised you, but you haven't actually made the kinyan till you've physically received it. I believe the structure of this chapter. We have kinyanim and we have chiyuvim. The message of this chapter is that the chiyuvim, the kinyanim, that what we have in the world leads to chiyuvim, to obligations. And so many of the kinyanim mentioned in the first half of the chapter, we meet in the second half of mitzvot and chiyuvim relating to them. So the kinyan leads to a chiyuv, but ultimately there's a circular structure, because the parak ends with a statement talking about by doing mitzvot, by fulfilling your chiyuvim, we are nochel et ha'aretz. We are inheriting the land, which means that the kinyan leads to a chiyuvim. By fulfilling the chiyuvim, we ultimately will inherit the land and get back to the kinyanim. Notice, I feel we have the idea of the brit. Going back to the brit I mentioned earlier, of Sinai, of Eliyahu HaNavi, of the mitzvot and the land. And getting back, and we're almost at the end, and relating to Dvir, so the first chapter, which dealt with the, was very, intuitively I realized that would be the chapter, because so much of the story I heard of Heshel of Avot al-Banim, his limud with his mother, and memory of his father was the relationship with the family, with touching on his connection to his father and to his mother. But a year later at the Yaskara, they asked me to teach a chapter of Nishmat HaMishnah, and I chose the second half, was the next chapter which they didn't get to, and it felt how apropos it was to Devere's story. He didn't come back for the next Shabbat, but part of not coming back for the next Shabbat was really the essence of that second message. We've been given the kinyan of Eretz Yisrael, but part of that kinyan includes responsibility, mechuyevut, and obligations. And there was such an incredibly depressing time before Ofrut Yitzuka that we felt the basic obligations of a country to its citizens weren't being lived up to when freely people living in the southern parts of Israel would be under missile attack day by day, and all sorts of general political constraints leading to not responding to that situation. And Devere, when he went in, he said the sign that he's going to go in, he's going to send a email, a SMS to his, a text message to his mother, and this has become a very popular bumper sticker recently in Israel. It says, "Machzirim la'am Yisrael takavod." We're going now to return the self-respect to Am Yisrael by putting a stop to this situation. And I felt that this has led to a large change. I feel the feeling in Israel about the country, the responsibility of the country to its citizens, that step, which has been a large price to that step, especially in international condemnation, but the feeling that we've come back to Eretz Yisrael, we have a responsibility to do what our basic mechuyavut to our citizens, and ultimately return to be nochel ha'aretz. As a closing note, I want to make one methodological point relating to the methodologies that I try to, the dual methodologies that I try to demonstrate today. When growing up, there were two things that always interested me. On one hand, I had an inclination towards academic scholarship. I studied with Dr. Bernstein and other scholars at Revel in YU. Later, I did a doctorate at Hebrew University. But another side, I felt very attracted to seeking the spirituality, seeking some sort of meaning that Torah should have, impact and meaning on the way we live our lives. And often I felt that I used to think that I had schizophrenia, because often the academic world was very often perceived as being very detached, where spirituality was seen as something a little bit fluffy in my life. But when 14 years ago, when I first came to Otniel and became a Talmud again, after I was already 30, I thought I knew what there is about Torah, I felt becoming a Talmud again to realize that these two drives are really two sides of one coin. Rav Kook often talks about Torah Eretz Yisrael, and it's an unclear concept, but I'd like to define it in a way to show why these two strives for spirituality and for scholarship are really one. We know there's a famous statement that after Churban HaMikdash, where is the Kadosh Baruch Hu found? In the Dalet Amot of Amalek. It's a very tragic statement by saying that Torah and God are disjoint from the flow of life itself. And part of going back to Eretz Yisrael, part of the b'sara of the Hitchatshut, of going back to Eretz Yisrael, is saying that Am Yisrael, Torah, and the experience of God is coming back to the flow of life itself. That being the case, on one hand, I want to learn anything I can take from life, from the world, that will enhance my study of Torah. I'm going to be open to take that. And if in the so much knowledge and methodologies have been developed, among other places, also in the academic world, I'm going to take what I can to enhance my understanding of Torah. But on the other hand, if I'm taking from life in the world to understand Torah, I want Torah to help me understand life. And that's where the spirituality comes in, that I want to learn Torah and feel that this Torah has meaning and significance. And that's why I feel very blessed that the last 14 years I've been at the yeshiva in Otniel, that I think this is what characterizes the yeshiva, trying to make this link together. And I'll end with the way I end every year in Otniel, going back to the insight I mentioned about looking at the blessing of every day in life. So we end Shi'ur in Otniel with, by noting that Hayom, Bet Adar, Tafshin Ayin Aleph, Ze Hayom, Asad Enai, Nagila V'Nisma Chavo. Okay, thank you.
I'm a father. 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 I'm a father.